All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. I cannot wait to talk about this movie.
Oh, my God. I've been wanting to subject Allison to this film for a long time. And she was like, are you really going to make me watch The Greatest Showman?
And it's 2 whole hours long.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty long movie for what it is.
I guess not quite 2 hours.
But it feels like a long time because it's so bad.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. I went to a really nice wedding.
So nice.
It was beautiful, and it's probably the best wedding I've ever been to. The ceremony was like 20 minutes long, which is just perfect. Every other wedding I've been to has been like 45 to an hour minute long ceremony.
Too long.
And you don't get to drink during it. But this one was 20 minutes, and you got to drink during
it. See, that's perfect.
I'm perfectly happy right here.
Were kids allowed at the wedding?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like when kids are allowed at weddings.
They were having a good time. Yeah, they were having a good time, though. It was outside.
Maybe kids can be allowed at the reception.
Yeah, they weren't too loud at the... I think all the kids that were there were in the wedding party, though.
Oh. Every child I've ever seen at a wedding, they always, like, have babies, and they always cry.
There were no babies there. They were all toddlers.
I guess that's not too bad.
They were all dancing. It was pretty cute.
She'd be like, there's a minimum age.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think they were all, like, 3+.
I'm sorry. Find a babysitter for your baby.
They could all walk.
That's good. Okay. Well, let's get into this movie because, oh boy, a lot happens
in this movie. So I saw this movie on a road trip with my boyfriend's family on the car TV, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was like, it was with his niece, so I couldn't like shit talk it as much as I wanted because I'm like, well, this is crap. And I would like whisper to Cole, like, I'm like, this is bad.
Yeah, okay. So I did not see this movie until last night.
Yeah.
And my experience with it was that many, many, many people around me were in love with this movie. Like,
yes.
Saw it multiple times.
Oh my gosh, me too.
In the theater.
Yes.
And I had only ever heard, like, 2 of the songs.
Yeah.
And I just remember it being like, I hate these songs.
Yeah.
If these are, like, the songs that people are listening to, there's no way I'm gonna like this movie.
For sure.
I need to give a huge disclaimer here. I have seen a ton of movie musicals. Ton of movie musicals. And I know what I like in a movie musical for the most part. I do not like when people are obviously lip syncing.
Yeah.
In movie musicals, I hate that. I understand that, like, pretty much in all movie musicals, they lip sync because that's how audio works.
Except Les Mis,
which nobody gives him enough credit for.
I know, it's really impressive.
Honestly. Really is really impressive. And
again, Hugh Jackman, really impressive in that movie. And yeah. we'll talk about what they did to these actors.
And also, like, I don't like in movie musicals when people are very obviously auto-tuned.
Yes.
And I get that, like, I think they do that one to add like that pop element.
Yeah.
And also, because when you cast a lot of really famous actors, the odds that they're all going to be able to sing as well as the best singing actor are really low.
But listen, Mamma Mia did it, and Pierce Brosnan is not a good singer.
Exactly.
But they pulled it off.
But here's the thing. In musicals, not everybody is the best singer.
That's like, true.
You have to just kind of go.
You work
with
around
what
it.
You're given.
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of just like, I'm like Les Mis, not to bring that up again, but like Russell Crowe is not a great singer.
Nope.
But you know what? He makes up for it. He's a really good actor.
He's a great actor. He does a great Javert. In all the acting scenes, he's awesome.
And they did, they tried their freaking hardest. And like,
the stars.
Yes. Yeah. And also, Les Mis just cast a lot of people who, they didn't just cast famous people.
Yeah.
Which is also how they managed to pull that off.
Yeah, they cast
some people who were actually...
Eponine.
Yeah, she was...
A stage actress.
Yeah, she was in the tour, or in the Broadway production of Les Mis before she was on that.
Yeah.
And then all the actors they did cast... And Eddie Redmayne was a film actor, but he hadn't really done that much at that point. Like...
And Sacha Baron Cohen and Helena Bonham Carter had already done Sweeney Todd.
And they were cast appropriately.
Yes.
Like, that's a big part of it. Casting appropriately is a big part of it. And that sometimes means that you can't cast Michelle Williams. Michelle Williams can't be in the movie.
I love Michelle Williams. Manchester by the Sea, amazing.
Sometimes she can't be in the movie.
Sometimes she can't always be in the movie, guys.
I'm sorry.
I know that we want Michelle Williams to be in every movie.
Sometimes she can't.
But sometimes she can't do it.
So, I automatically just knew I wasn't going to like this movie.
Oh, of course.
But I didn't know.
How much?
How much I was going to dislike.
Yes, yes. And also, Allison has a lot of pre-existing knowledge about P.T. Barnum.
Oh my gosh, yeah. What? This is... Oh, okay, we'll talk about this later when we start talking about the real life P.T. Mm-hmm. Barnum, but I just don't understand why they even made this about P.T. Barnum.
I know.
This could have been about a fictional man.
A fictional, but they were like, oh, P.T. Barnum.
Because he has a name. Because he has a name. Okay, here we go.
People know that. People know that name, right?
As a child, P.T. Barnum and his tailor father, Philo, work for the Hallett family. Barnum and Hallett's daughter, Charity, grow up and eventually, they fall in love. P.T. Barnum and Charity.
There's this whole singing thing.
Yeah, this is... Right at the very beginning, I'm not a fan.
No.
The child acting is horrendous.
Terrible.
Terrible child acting. The singing isn't even really that good, so I don't know why they had to cast these children.
Yes.
When Charity attends finishing school, they write to each other, eventually marrying and raising two daughters, Caroline and Helen, in New York City. They live a humble life, though Charity is happy, Barnum craves more. So that's all one song.
I like how they're telling you what songs
they're
go
doing
with.
It like by song. Yeah. Because that is literally how this plot works.
So true.
This plot is
It's
done.
Just like methods to get from one song to another, but not in the cool way like Mamma Mia does it. Because they wrote these songs for this musical. It's not like this is a jukebox musical.
Yeah, no. Yeah, and you know, I'm not a big fan of jukebox musicals for the most part, but Mamma Mia does it amazing.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, this is just really, really bad. Usually this is a jukebox musical problem.
Yes. This is I don't know what they were thinking.
This is their problem. Yes. You know, and this is what I don't like either. The people who wrote this, the people who wrote this music, are the same people that wrote La La Land's music and Dear Evan Hansen's music.
Those are both great.
Yeah, they're both great. What went wrong here?
I think this is just them trying to cater to the masses.
Yeah, I agree with this. They were like, La La Land wasn't loved enough.
Right.
And you're like, but it was good.
But it was good.
And it did what this is trying to do, but well.
But
it did it well. If you're trying to be like, ooh, spectacle on the screen. It's hard to translate musicals to the screen if the goal is spectacle. Like, you want to see something, if you want to see a movie that does this, like, absolutely abysmally, Cats.
Oh my God, Cats, it's so funny.
Cats as a musical is all spectacle.
You have to get hammered for that movie, though,
I will say.
So
it does not translate to the screen at all, because... It is not impressive to watch, like, CGI cats dance. That's
no And then Idris Elba is naked at one point, and it's very scary.
But then, like, yes. But
Go
then,
listen to our episode on cats.
But then this... But then La La Land, if, like, you want to translate, like, the feeling of spectacle, you have to lean into what is spectacular in movies.
Yeah.
Which La La Land does. And this tries that, and I would say, like, it does do things that you absolutely could not do on a stage.
For sure.
Unlike Cats, where they just, like, were like, what if we just did the musical?
I know, it's like, well, why don't you just do it on stage?
Yeah, just do it.
Just do it with the makeup and the costume. That's what's cool about it.
Exactly. They should have just done a pro shot of Cats.
Exactly. I'm like, that would have been way cooler.
But this, I just think it fails because it looks like trash.
Yes. Yeah, it's horrible. Everything
CGI is really obvious.
And everything is moving way faster than life.
Yes, okay.
It feels like it's like...
Also, okay, they needed... The fact that they go from 10-year-old child to Hugh Jackman. And Hugh Jackman is the same age that he is now.
He's Hugh Jackman!
He looks the same. Michelle Williams looks the same, but they're supposed to be like 20. Just get some 20-year-olds.
Just get some 20-year-olds who look like Hugh Jackman and Michelle Williams. It's not that hard.
It looks ridiculous.
Oh my God, this young, up-and-coming man. It's Hugh Jackman.
He's 45.
It looks ridiculous.
And
I mean,
she's 40.
I mean, they look great, but, like, you don't look like you're 20.
No. And it just, like, from 10 to Hugh Jackman walking like a strapping young lad, but he's 40.
He's 40.
He's dressed like a 20-year-old.
But he's 40.
It's really...
Actually, I'm 33.
Yeah, that's how it felt. I was like, this is moving really fast. Like, we immediately already have... It's 5 minutes in. He's already married.
Yeah.
He already has a job. They already have two children.
Two, like, actual, like, children, not toddlers.
Yeah, they're, like... One of them's, like, 10.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, wow. This is also at the very beginning where you start noticing how fast the choreography is.
Yes.
Like, in
the scenes with him and Michelle Williams dancing, which obviously aren't really them.
Obviously, by the way. By the way, obviously.
The dancing is pretty good, but then also you're like, well, that's not the people, and it's sped up.
Every time they pan out or they do a silhouette, you can just be sure it's not them.
Oh, for sure.
Just be sure it's not them.
Yep.
It's someone else doing it.
Yes.
And, yeah, also, I just want to say, like, in most choreography situations, when you run, you're just, like, you're pretty running.
Yeah.
In this, they're sprinting.
Yeah.
Full on.
Very strange.
Full on running at each other.
Yeah.
I was like, this is just very breakneck choreography.
Yeah.
This does not let up.
No, no, it just keeps going.
The whole film. So, now we're here, right? Barnum loses his shipping clerk job when the ticket, or when the company goes bankrupt. So that happens in 2 minutes.
In 2 minutes, yeah.
He later secures a bank loan, deceptively using his former employer's lost ships as collateral. That happens in 2 minutes. He opens Barnum's American Museum in downtown Manhattan, which features various wax figures. Ticket sales are slow, and so his children suggest showcasing something alive. So we run into a problem, which is that his museum isn't performing well.
Yeah.
Well, don't worry, because the very next scene, the problem's going to be solved 100%, and it's not going to run into any other more issues, because Barnum adds freak performers, such as bearded lady Letty Lutz.
And, like, a little person, and black trapeze artists.
Yeah, that's something else. The freaks are a combination of, like, normal, oddities that you would see at a circus.
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
I think American Horror Story Freak Show.
Yeah, and then just random people of color.
Yes. Yes, that is what it is. It's like, yeah.
Also, some of the people are, like, they have, like, the black trapeze artist, right? Like, they have a gimmick. But some people, I don't know what their gimmick is.
I don't know either.
I'm like, so the little guy, He just rides around on a horse.
Yeah.
And the tattoo man just has tattoos.
And that tall guy, he's just tall.
He's just tall. They don't really... Well, I guess that their entire performance is doing one dance number and then leaving.
I'm like, so you've spent all your time on this one choreographed dance.
Yeah, and then everyone leaves, and then that's the show. And people have paid, like, the equivalent of $10.
That's like an Always Sunny episode.
It's really bad. You're like... I would like to see more of what the show is.
Yeah, what is that? What exactly is the show?
Because it seems like the show just gradually becomes a bigger and bigger choreographed number, yes. And then, like, that's the end.
Yeah, that's it. That's all they do.
It's a 5 minute.
All right, it's over.
It's a 5 minute dance number, and then you leave. Anyway,
this is the greatest show.
You came 30 minutes out to the docks.
You walked, by the way.
Yeah, you didn't have a horse, and so. Also, him tracking down the freaks, hilarious.
Oh, horrible.
And I have to talk about why he likes freaks, right? It's because when he was 10, he stole a loaf of bread but was caught, and they didn't do anything to him. They just took the bread back, which I was like, that's nice.
That's nice, yeah.
And back in the day, Jean Valjean.
Jean Valjean, you know.
Prison.
Yeah.
And then a lady who has some kind of, like...
Yeah.
Deformity.
Yeah.
In her face comes and gives him an apple.
Yeah, she has, like, elephantitis or something.
And then he, like, forever is, like, interested in them. And I'm like, okay.
Okay, question mark.
Weird. And then, like, he, all the like, quote-unquote freaks he meets, right? Like, they are... just living their lives.
Yeah, they're just like, yeah, they're like, we figured out how to live our lives.
And he comes in and is like, hey, do this thing. And they're all like, no. But then he's like, but what if you did? And they're like, okay. And it takes no convincing.
No convincing!
My favorite, this is probably one of my favorite parts of the movie, is that the bearded lady is, like, touted as, like, one of the main characters, but she's just not.
She's really not at all.
She's just, like, not in it anymore. She's, like, the freak that they often focus the camera on, and that's it.
So true.
She's not in it any more than, like, Tom Thumb.
Nope.
But, like...
it's really interesting how they're like, this is all about acceptance, but they never really focus on any of the quote-unquote freaks.
No, they don't. And, like, also, her bit is that, like, oh, she can sing really well. But then that never comes into play.
Yeah.
She doesn't ever... there's never a part where they're like, oh, she should sing. That would... No. Very weird. Anyway, obviously, this garners higher attendance, but also protests and... poor reviews from well-known critics. A well-known critic, James Gordon Bennett. So they are doing well, but also people are mad now.
Yeah, people are like, this is disgusting.
So that's all in the song Come Alive. which is their big...
I come alive.
I also have to talk about how poor the sound mixing is.
Oh, it's horrible.
The very first song...
It sounds like you were in a club.
Why? When he's talking and he's like...
Oh my gosh, whenever I listen to this with my client, she loves it. Like, I have to turn it up at the beginning because you cannot hear him
I had to turn on, I was listening to it at normal volume. Mm-hmm. I had to turn on the subtitles just so I could hear what he was saying in the first song.
Yes.
Because he's literally going, and then it's like, whoa!
I know, it's horrible.
So you can't turn it up too loud because the woes are so loud.
Yeah.
But him talking is like,
you're way better at quiet banter than I am. Ba 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 ba.
I know what he's saying, but he's like, and you're like, speak up, bitch. No one can hear you.
You are a Broadway actor. What are you doing, Hugh?
This was like, I'm like, when people were in the theater, were they just like,
what is he saying? Yeah. Like, that would have been me.
Me too.
What?
I know that like in theater you have better volume than here, but
there's no way they could hear it. There's no way. You can't hear it without subtitles. You cannot tell me.
No. You can't. I've listened to it in like soundtrack version. It's just terribly mixed.
Yes.
A lot of this movie is terribly mixed. So Barnum renames his venture Barnum Circus and recruits playwright Philip Carlyle.
Who is Zac Efron.
With the worst sideburns I've ever
seen. Oh
my
god, it's horrible. The Other Side is a horrible song too.
To help generate publicity. The Other Side. Yeah, this is a terrible song. Again, it's a song of like, we have a problem, we're going to solve it all in one song.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really easy to solve it.
Yes.
And like...
Elliot. Oh my god.
Oh, he just has to be in the middle of everything. Philip is mesmerized by the African-American trapeze artist Ann Wheeler, which I like that we say this. This is like, to me, one of the worst parts of the movie.
Oh, yeah, the whole like...
The love story. Which is non-existent, by the way.
It doesn't exist.
This is the extent of their love story. He looks at her in this moment where he's mesmerized by her. She's no way could she even tell he was there.
Yeah.
And then later he like says that he's not going to exclude her because of race. Then they hold hands.
And then that's
the love story.
Well, yeah, they hold hands and then like some white people are like.
Yeah.
And then he's like. And doesn't hold her hand anymore. And she's like, what the fuck, dude?
And then they, but already I'm like, why are you even holding her hand?
You haven't even talked at all.
And then it's, he runs into a burning building to save her. And like, you're like, what? How did this come to be? And they have their song.
People are just gonna like, suspend their disbelief because it's Zendaya and Zac Efron.
Exactly. And that is exactly what happened.
Yes.
Is people were just like, these are hot people who I would love to see together. And so I don't care if the love story is good or if it makes any sense or if it comes out of anywhere.
Yes.
I'll just like it because I think they're attractive.
Yes.
And they're acting well. They are acting well.
They're good actors.
Part of me believes that this movie is like 5 hours long and that they cut it down to be 2 hours. Because there is just... All of these people are acting their freaking hearts out.
They are.
And it makes me feel like there's a lot more behind the scenes lead up that we didn't see.
Yeah, I would say.
Which would also explain to me like the breakneck pacing of this film.
Yes.
Because this entire film is problem, solution, problem, solution, problem, solution.
Yes.
Like there's a problem introduced, the next scene we solve it. Then there's a new problem, the next scene we solve it.
There's no overarching issue or conflict.
No, I don't even know what the overarching issue of this movie is. Other than like P.T. Barnum maybe like wants too much. That's kind of like introduced at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it's like the last problem. But for the most part, that doesn't actually come into play a lot.
Yeah. It's very weird.
Yeah.
Who wrote this movie? Who did it?
Jenny Bix.
She doesn't even have a Wikipedia page.
It probably is her first damn movie. Feels like
this
it.
Is horrible. Okay, where were we?
Oh my god, where?
Rewrite the stars. Right.
Yeah, so... Anyway, Philip is mesmerized by Ann Wheeler, but he hides his feelings. While touring abroad, Philip arranges for Barnum and his troupe to meet Queen Victoria. They've had one whole show,
weird.
And now they're meeting Queen Victoria. Barnum persuades famed Swedish singer Jenny Lind to tour America with him as her manager.
This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I know he's like, I want to be taken more seriously. So
I'll talk about this the real life.
Yeah, we're gonna.
The real life part of this doesn't make a lot of sense either. I think P.T. Barnum really just goes for things.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was just like, well, let's just roll the dice here.
That's maybe the one thing this movie gets right about P.T. Barnum, is that he at any moment is ready to throw all caution to the wind. And that's true. Yeah. However, it does work out for him a lot more in real life than it did in this movie.
Listen, I think that if they had done like a actual biopic about P.T. Barnum starring Hugh Jackman, and if they did it like a Wolf of Wall Street.
Now see, I was gonna bring this up in the facts part, but I'll say it now. This was originally supposed to be a biopic. Originally, this was going to be a straight-up biopic about P.T. Barnum. And somehow, along the way, it became The Greatest Showman and it was a musical.
That's horrible. That's sickening. So I want to write an apology letter to Hugh Jackman just for...
I don't know if Hugh Jackman was signed on to the biopic, but it was... been good, though. Originally, the studio was going to produce a biopic and then it got turned into this.
Who pitched the musical idea?
I don't know, but they were like, you know, I don't think that's going to sell. I mean,
you might pick up a couple of Oscars.
Listen, they're right. This made a ton of money.
This literally had a budget of $84 million and made $435 million.
Yeah, this did well. Whoever did it was right, but...
At what cost?
At what cost? Anyway, Lynn's American debut is a success. During her song, Philip's parents see him and Anne holding hands. This is never enough. As Barnum gains favor with aristocratic patrons, he distances himself from his troupe, advising them to work without him. Dejected, they decide to stand against the local harassers.
This is me!
Yeah. Ugh. And so this is like the Freaks' only song that they really get by themselves. It's bad. It's really short.
Uh-huh.
Also, yeah, Jenny Lind, I like this. She's an opera singer. She sings a pop song.
Love.
She sings one song, and then it's over.
And then it's over, and she's world-renowned.
And also, I want to say that, like, absolutely she only sings one song, because we see her start the concert, and we see her finish the concert.
Yep.
Multiple times.
Yes.
She sings one song. Hilarious. What a great opera singer she is.
Wow.
This is also the only person in the movie who... So it's played by Rebecca Ferguson, mm-hmm. Jenny Lind is. And she did not sing this song.
No. Nope.
She lip-syncs this song. Someone else is credited as singing this song. Very weird. Why not just hire
the singer?
Maybe she's not pretty enough. But also, just hire someone who is pretty and can sing.
They exist. I promise.
Yeah. They do. There's a lot of them, actually.
Yeah. I mean, Zendaya is in this movie.
Exactly.
It's not like you didn't have the budget.
She can't be anyone. So... Anyway, when Philip and Anne attend the theater together, which Anne just immediately forgives Philip, they run into Philip's parents. Now, they chastise him for parading around with the help. So Philip immediately, even though the last scene, he was scared.
And he like...
In this scene, he's completely over that and is ready to...
And there was no... Parents. There was nothing to change his mind within that time.
No, nothing in between happened that made him change his mind. I guess he just changed his mind.
Yeah, but we don't see that.
No. So Philip tries to convince Anne that they can be together, but she disagrees, saying they will never be accepted socially.
Rewrite the stars. Which, if that had been released as just a pop song, would have been fine.
This is another one of those scenes where I was like, they're really working hard.
They're acting. But they're singing. They're doing a good job.
This looks like trash.
It does.
The choreography is way too fast.
I feel bad for these actors.
Also, the CGI is really, really bad.
Yeah.
The scenes where Zendaya is swinging around on the rope, and it's like 15 miles an hour per rope. Yes. Her hair standing still. Yes. Not blowing at all. They couldn't have got a fan for her. Nobody thought that looked silly. It does look silly.
It does look silly.
She looks ridiculous. They both... And like... The way her body is being catapulted up, like, she would break her neck.
Yeah.
This is...
Not realistic at all.
No, so bad. As Barnum takes Lind on U.S. tour, Charity, who stays home with their daughters, feels isolated from her husband. Tightrope.
Michelle Williams.
Yeah, she's crying.
She's like, I'm just here to get paid.
Once again, they waltz. This is hilarious. There's a part where they waltz, and they're waltzing like 4x speed. And I was like, even the waltzes in this film have to be so fast. Because they're all going to pop music. Every song in this movie is exactly the same. Even the ballads are way too fast.
Yes.
This is like the ballad of the movie, and it's like pop music. It's so much.
It's so much.
We can have a ballad. While on tour, Lind becomes romantically attracted to Barnum. When he rebuffs her, she threatens to quit and later retaliates with a surprise kiss at the end of her last show, which is photographed by the press. Weird. Comes out of absolutely nowhere. And it's like, she's not like revenge kissing him, really.
She's like, goodbye.
She's more just like, you don't understand how what you do to people's feelings. And it's supposed to be this like, oh, Barnum doesn't love anyone but himself. And like, he did it to his freaks. So now he's doing it to Lind. But you're like, but he didn't do it to Lind.
Yeah.
Like, he did nothing to make Lind feel like, because of course you can't have P.T. Barnum actually cheat on his wife, because that's going to ruin the character.
It's going to ruin his credibility.
It's going to ruin like this sweet, kind, non-racist, humanitarian thing that you've built up.
Well, when I think of humanitarian, I think of P.T. Barnum.
It's going to like ruin that like image that you've built up, right? If he actually flirts with her. But you also don't want to hate Rebecca Lind, because in real life she did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
So you have to just make it seem like she was genuinely in love with him and didn't realize that he didn't love her, but that makes no sense.
Yeah, it's very strange.
He never gave her a single signal ever that he liked her. He was never even slightly unfaithful to his wife. Very bizarre.
Strange. Just doesn't really make any sense. The thing that they say, like, at the beginning of the sentence doesn't have anything to do with what they say at the end of the sentence.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like this entire movie.
Yeah. You're like, what?
How did you get there?
You're like, okay, I guess.
I guess.
We're moving. It doesn't matter. We're moving on and it'll never
come. We're moving forward, so here we go.
Barnum returns home to find his circus caught on fire, caused by a fight between protesters and the troupe. Philip runs into the burning building, believing Anne is inside. She's not. He suffers serious injuries before Barnum rescues him. Barnum learns the culprits have been caught and that Lind canceled her tour after her and Barnum's scandal. Barnum's mansion is foreclosed upon and Charity takes her daughters to her parents' home.
I mean, yeah, there's a picture of him kissing this chick on the front of the newspaper.
But then I like how he's like, I don't love her. And she's like, duh.
Duh.
That's not the problem.
And he's like, she's like, you don't love anyone. You love yourself.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Which is true.
Sorry, Elliot's
being a butt. Hi, bub.
Anyway, so
devastated, Barnum retreats to a local bar. His troupe finds him there and say that despite their disappointments, they still consider themselves a family. Then P.T. Barnum, this is not in the thing, but then he goes through all the pictures on the wall, and every single picture is about him. In fact, this bar has a framed photo of a portrait of his family. This bar has a photo of P.T. Barnum's family framed on the wall. Liam was like, I don't know if it's supposed to be real. And I was like, why wouldn't it be real? He just read 8 newspaper clippings about him.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they have a freaking photo of his family?
True.
I was like, is this his bar? No. It's just a bar. No. They love him, though, apparently. Yeah. Also, these freaks have no self-respect.
No, it's really... Immediately. It's kind of disrespectful to people with disabilities.
It's just like, hey... You gave us a shot, and yeah, you treated us like shit pretty much immediately after we got you what you wanted, and yeah, it's really clear that you were only using us for money, but hey, buddy, we got nowhere else to go.
We're a family.
And hey,
what?
Hey, you're the guy that makes us so that people don't scream when they see us on the streets, so come on.
Come on.
And he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
So inspired, he resolves to build a new show and not let ambition rule him from now on, which I did not get that from the song. Philip awakens in the hospital with Anne by his side, who, by the way, has been there for 4 days in the exact same outfit with the exact same facial expression.
And then they kiss.
Yeah, they do for the first time. While Barnum and Charity reunite. So again... There's a problem. The very next scene, it is solved.
It is solved.
It does take 2 scenes to solve the wife problem.
Yes.
Because we gotta solve the show problem first. So this is the Rewrite the Stars reprise. The recovering Philip offers his share of profits to help Barnum rebuild the circus in exchange for becoming a full partner, which Barnum readily accepts. To economize, Barnum transforms the enterprise into an open-air tent circus. The revamped circus is a huge success, and Barnum has Philip oversee daily operations so he can spend more time with his family. In the last scene, Barnum leaves the circus early and arrives on an elephant to watch his daughter's ballet recital with his wife.
This is the greatest show!
Also, hilarious.
So funny.
He leaves in the middle of the show and is like, It's you, buddy.
It's you, buddy. You're on.
And he's like, okay.
Okay.
And nobody cares. But it's okay.
And they all know the dance.
They only have one song. Also, the whole crowd knows the dance. Hilarious. Why even do that? There's enough people dancing. You didn't need the crowd to
dance. Didn't need the crowd.
And do they not need the elephant?
They're yeah, doing, I mean, they're doing the show.
Doing the show right now. How does the elephant know where to go? Is it like a homing pigeon?
Don't know.
I
mean, they have really good memory, so maybe.
Okay, Jesus Christ, this is bad.
Bad.
That's the end of the movie.
That's the end of the movie.
A lot happened.
Yeah.
But didn't take a lot to get there.
No, it's really, really bad.
We've already addressed most of my problems with this movie, which is that breakneck speed. No conflict. There's no, like, stakes.
No, no stakes.
No stakes. Now...
kind of disrespectful to the disabled community.
Yeah, just in general, like, I think we've talked about why this is a bad movie, like, as just a movie.
Yes.
Like, even if this wasn't about P.T. Barnum, this would be a poor movie.
Yeah, even if it was a fictitious circus owner, right?
Yeah.
This it would still be bad. But it's made all the worse because they chose to make it about P.T. Barnum, an actual person who Allison will talk about now.
Yes. Okay. I do also want to say that I do think that there is a certain level to this movie that might have been far more enjoyable had I seen it in a theater.
Yeah.
The CGI might not have looked so stupid mm-hmm. on a theater screen.
Yeah.
In home, this movie does not translate outside of the theater.
Yeah.
I believe that, like, the spectacle might be better. Like, that's the only aspect of this film I'll give it, is, like, if it's trying to be spectacle, maybe that translated better in the theater.
Yes.
It does not translate at home.
No. I agree.
But now let's talk about P.T. Barnum. So here we go. I'm not going to read his whole bio. I'm going to give you the highlights.
Yeah.
Because I've already read this. So Phineas Taylor Barnum, he was born in 1810 and died in 1891.
Pretty old.
Pretty old.
Especially the 1800s.
Yeah. I also want to say the time period for this movie does not translate well at all.
Nope.
They did not translate this movie well. He was an American showman, politician, and businessman, remembered for promoting celebrated hoaxes and for founding the Barnum and Bailey Circus, which was started in 1871 and officially stopped in 2017.
Yep.
So, tons of years. He said of himself, "I am a showman by profession, and all the gilding shall make nothing else of me." According to critics, his personal aim was to put money in his own coffers, and he is widely credited with coining the adage, "There's a sucker born every minute,"
there
although
you go.
No proof can be found of him ever actually saying this. So, I think, this is where I think some of the things that get out of this movie come from.
Uh-huh.
The whole idea that he's, like, very anti-racist and, like, very pro-diversity.
Yeah.
I think this comes from, in 1865, mm-hmm. he was elected to the Connecticut legislature, and he was really pro 13th Amendment.
Okay.
So 13th Amendment obviously outlawed slavery.
Unless you were a prisoner.
Right.
So slavery is still legal with
prisoners.
With prisoners.
Yeah, which says in the 13th Amendment. But he also was known, like, when he was elected as mayor of Connecticut in 1875, he was, like, I guess a pretty decent mayor. Like, he... Mm-hmm. He improved the water supply. He brought gas lights to the street. He also enforced liquor and prostitution laws.
Okay.
But he was instrumental in bringing the first hospital to the town.
Okay.
So he wasn't awful. He did not actually establish the circus until he was 60 years old.
Wow.
So he was very old. He only was, like, actually worked in the circus for, like, 20 years.
Interesting.
He was actually married to Charity Hallett. They had mm-hmm. a really good marriage. He was married for 44 years.
Wow.
They had four daughters, okay. one of whom died.
Aw.
As
it happens in 1800.
As it happens. And Barnum himself died of a stroke.
Okay.
He was actually buried in the Mountain Grove Cemetery, which he designed himself. And he wrote his own eulogy.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a P.T. Barnum thing if I've ever heard one.
So now let's actually start getting into, like, who P.T. Barnum was, how he came to be, et cetera. So, his dad was a tailor, mm-hmm. as well as an innkeeper and a storekeeper, but they were not poor, okay?
Yeah.
Because his maternal grandfather was a legislator, mm-hmm. a landowner, a justice of the peace, and a lottery schemer. I don't know what a lottery schemer is, So I thought we would look it up together.
Yes.
It is a type of advance fee fraud, which begins... Oh, okay. So he used to scam people.
Okay.
For the lottery.
Interesting.
So that's... They were rich.
Yeah.
Like, through their inheritance, right? So that's, like, his family thing. Mm-hmm. So this idea that, like, oh, they grew up so poor, his dad was, like, working as a tailor for this family. No, that's not true. He began his career as a showman at 25 when he purchased a blind and almost completely paralyzed slave woman named Joyce Heath.
Ooh.
In order to do this, because slavery was already outlawed in New York at this time, he exploited a loophole which allowed him to lease her for a year for $1,000. He borrowed $500 of that to complete the sale. He lied and said that she was George Washington's former nurse and 161 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So Heath died in February of 1836, so that was a year after he purchased her, at no more than 80 years old. Probably because Barnum had worked her for 10 to 12 hours every single day.
Mm-hmm.
He hosted a live autopsy of her body in a New York saloon where spectators paid 50 cents to see the dead woman cut up and revealed that she was likely half of her purported age.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he bought a slave woman who was paralyzed and blind.
And then worked her to death. And then... worked her to death. And then had her cut up in front of people for money.
So that's his first foray into the showman world. So he then started a variety troupe called Barnum's Grand Scientific and Musical Theater. But it didn't really go very well because it was followed by the Panic of 1837.
Okay.
Which I guess was like a really bad recession.
Financial crisis.
Yeah. But he then purchased this, in 1841, he purchased Scudder's American Museum.
Which is what we see in the film, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yeah. This is, like, kind of where he renames it Barnum's American Museum.
Yep.
And it actually was really popular. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, like, a failure. It actually went super well.
Yeah.
This is pretty insane. He added a lighthouse lamp. Which attracted attention. Giant paintings of animals were in the upper windows. And the roof was turned into a garden with a view of the city where hot air balloon rides were done daily.
Whoa.
He then added, like, there was a lot of changing series of live acts and curiosities, including, like, stuffed animals, albinos, little people, jugglers, magicians, models, a menagerie of animals. So, like, basically... what it ends up becoming in later. This is, like, what he does from the very beginning. So, I also want to talk about this in the Wikipedia article. Does not talk about it, but P.T. Barnum also, he was kind of, like, we'll call him a connoisseur of hoaxes. Okay?
Yeah.
He also was, before he became a showman, and kind of hopped on this train. He actually was a snake oil salesman.
Mm-hmm. Like a Pirelli from Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, so he sold, like, heroin to babies for their coughs and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of people were doing that. Doctors were doing that.
Yeah.
And
but he also did it.
I believe the thing... Let me see if I can remember what the thing he sold was. I believe P.T. Barnum snake oil salesman... I want to see. I like that they talk about P.T. Barnum Sucker's Born, but they don't actually talk about what he sold.
Colonel John Snake Oil.
He did not sell snake oil, actually.
Uh-huh.
He sold, like, it was like bear grease or something like that, which was meant to, like, help with muscle pains, but really was, like, Vaseline and, like, bullshit.
Yeah.
Snake oil actually worked. If you want a really detailed episode on that, you can listen to Maintenance Phase has an episode called Snake Oil. It's very good. It's where I learned about that P.T. Barnum was a snake oil salesman before he was a showman.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea, like, P.T. Barnum tried out lots of cons. Getting into the con in which he was really, really good.
He's just throwing shit at the wall until something stuck.
Yeah, P.T. Barnum actually is very, by all accounts, very charismatic.
I mean, I think you would have to be, right?
I think
you'd
have to be, yeah. And really good at conning. So now let's talk about his very first major hoax. So, in 1842, he introduced a creature with a body of a monkey and a tail of a fish known as a Fiji mermaid. He leased it from a fellow museum owner, and Barnum justified his hoaxes by saying that they were advertisements.
Yeah.
So he doesn't believe in duping the public, but he believes in attracting and then pleasing them. So he followed his mermaid exhibition by exhibiting Charles Stratton, the little person called General Tom Thumb. So that is the person that we see in the movie.
Yes. They call him Tom Thumb.
Yes. So he actually was a little person. He was 24 inches tall at full height, but he was not an adult. He was a four-year-old.
Four-year-old when he got him. Ha ha.
He was stated to be 11, but no, he was four. With heavy coaching and natural talent, the boy was taught to imitate people from Hercules to Napoleon. He was drinking wine by 5 and smoking cigars by the age of 7 for the public's amusement. In 1843, Barnum hired the Native American dancer Fu Hum Mi, the first of many of the First Nations peoples to whom he presented. He did meet Queen Victoria with General Tom Thumb, and Queen Victoria was amused but saddened by the little man.
Oh.
And it was a publicity coup, of course. It opened doors to visits from royalty throughout all of Europe. He met the Tsar of Russia, and it enabled him to acquire dozens of new attractions, including lots of automatons and other mechanical things. He also went on a spending spree at this time and bought tons of other museums, including Rembrandt Peale's Museum in Philadelphia, which was the nation's first major museum ever. And by late 1846, he was drawing like 400,000 visitors a year. So this whole, like, barely making it through thing, not true.
Not true.
Now let's talk about Jenny Lind. Woo boy. So this is actually semi-accurate to the movie. Semi. So he really did just meet her. Not while he met Queen Victoria, but he just became aware of her when she was very popular. So it wasn't like he was introduced to her. Obviously, he just was, like, aware of her popularity.
Mm-hmm.
He had never, ever heard her sing. And he basically was like, I want you to perform a tour. And she was like, why? And he was like, what if I give you $1,000 a night for 150 performances in America? That's insane. Also, all of the expenses were paid by him, and she was allowed to bring her own troupe. She was allowed to pick who she wanted to bring.
Wild.
He was super confident, and not only that, but he actually paid it all up front to her.
Wow.
He gave her everything up front, and in order to do that, he basically had to mortgage or sell absolutely everything he owned.
Jesus.
Because it was so much money. And I want to say that is why in the movie he loses his mansion when the tour is canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, why are they what?
Yeah.
But he lost his mansion because he had mortgaged his mansion
to pay for her
up front, which they don't mention. Yeah, she gets paid an astounding amount of money.
Yeah.
But she does donate it all to charity. That's true.
Interesting.
So she doesn't keep any of the money.
Why?
Why did he pay her so much? Because he's an idiot, I guess. And because he has a problem. So anyway, they did do this. He borrowed a lot of the money also. So it gave Lind the option of withdrawing from the tour after either 60 or 100 performances, but she had to pay Barnum $25,000 if she did.
Mm-hmm.
So she did end up doing this eventually. I think after her 100 performances, so she didn't finish all 150. Mm-hmm. She finished 100, paid him $25,000, and backed out early.
Gotcha.
Not because they were in love, but because they actually didn't like each other.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, like, there was a lot of speculation at the time that they were having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone that's close to them, and they all have, like, been very adamant that, like, no, we were not having an affair. Like, it was purely a business relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, he was my manager, but literally we hardly ever spoke.
Yeah.
And it seems pretty, like, likely that that's the truth. Like, and in fact, one of, people think of the reason she actually left the tour was because they were getting on each other's nerves so much, and she was very tired, and on top, so she just decided to back out because she, like, didn't want to do it anymore. Really not, like, a big deal. She just was like, eh. She actually did try to come back after and finish the tour after a few months off, but, like, the hype around her kind of died, and so she didn't really get on it. And then she ended up marrying, like, this pianist, this, like, German pianist, and people, like, did not like this guy at all, apparently. He was, like, much younger than her.
Interesting.
And was not very personable.
Okay.
But they got, they married and had a really happy life and died together. But P.T. Barnum wasn't really put out by her quitting because she made the equivalent of $21 million on her tour.
Yeah.
So he actually did much, much better.
He did fine. Yeah.
Yeah. She ended up, again, signing a new agreement, which gave her the original fee plus the remainder of the Coffin's profits after Barnum received a $5,000 management fee. And she basically used all the money she made to give to charity. She was super popular. She did amazing. And Barnum came out on top. He didn't lose everything because of this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, his theater was burned down. That did really happen. Someone burned down his theater. It wasn't actually that big of a deal. He didn't actually lose a lot of money from it. I think there was, like, a downturn around that same time, which in which he kind of did poorly. But he just switched to the... That's why they switched to the tent, because he basically couldn't afford a new building, and then it actually worked out way better for him.
They could travel and...
Exactly.
Yeah.
It ended up working out way better for him. So he never really did that bad. I don't know. He
seems like he just kind of used people.
Yeah, I mean, he was a really good con man, and he never really actually did bad. And I mean, it's like, I don't know, what can you say? Like, the circus thing didn't actually start until he was 60, and it, that was basically just him reviving his thing.
His museum, but making it traveling in a
tent. Yeah, and that was much later.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He basically did the same thing as his museum, but toured it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He was known as the Shakespeare of advertising.
Interesting.
It, like, he basically, yeah, just, like, used people. I mean, he seems to me like he's not, like, the worst person in the world.
No,
like,
I mean, there are definitely worse people, right?
Yeah. But he's not a good person.
He's not what they make him out to be in The Greatest Showman.
Certainly not. I think, like, here's, like, the worst. Here's what, like, really is bad, right? Is that he was not, by all accounts, like a bad person. He was pro-union. He was anti-slavery, et cetera, et cetera. He was, seemed like a pretty decent mayor, like had a nice, had nice personal relationships.
Yeah.
He was very professional. However, he treated the freaks exactly how everyone else treated the freaks.
He bought a woman, worked her to death in a year, and then had her cut up in front of people for money. So
he basically employed a four-year-old and taught him to smoke and drink for the amusement of adults.
Yeah. So this whole idea of him, like, seeing the freaks as, like,
oh, people.
As people, and you know,
he loves them. That's like, no.
No.
The way, like, he really did not care about them.
No, he was exploiting them.
Yeah, and they were being, like, paid.
Yeah, but...
And that was...
But he wasn't treating them well.
No, and, like, I think making a movie about how well he treats freaks when he historically treated people badly, that he, like, he historically exploited them.
Yeah.
Is, like, why would you make that?
Why would you
make
that?
He's not the worst person of all time.
But why would you martyr him like this?
Yeah, he's not that. He's actually the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really not liked by critics.
You can make a really interesting biopic, though.
Yeah, I mean, yes, exactly. Like, as a biopic, this would be very interesting. It'd be very interesting to see, like, this money-hungry man versus this, like, very kind legislator.
Yeah.
Like, people are black and... We're not black and white.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah, I think it would be real... I thought it would be really interesting.
Yeah.
Like Wolf of Wall Street in the 1800s.
And listen, Barnum gets like absolutely smashed on social media. And for a good reason, especially his younger days, he's real rough.
Yeah.
Like, he did some really rough things, and he tricked people, and I think, here's what we also, this is, like, not addressed in this, but circus freaks were, until very recently in the time period of history, they weren't, like, they weren't the ringtop part.
Yeah.
The ringtop part is, like, the animals and the trapeze artists.
And the tightrope walkers.
These people were, like, in cages.
In front of the tent.
In front of the tent. Then you could go, like, during the daytime and watch them and, like, throw shit at them.
Yeah, that's how it was.
And yell at them. So, like, that was their job. Their job was to be a freak. Their job wasn't to, like, show these people that you're just, like...
The job was to have people ridicule them.
Yes. And you got paid for that. And you got to travel. And, like, that was the biz.
I mean, yeah.
And, like, yeah, there's no, like, accounts of P.T. Barnum being, like, personally mean to them. I don't think P.T. Barnum cared about them.
I literally don't think he cared.
I think he was, like...
These are a means to an end.
Exactly. Which is, like... I mean, that's how most bosses are.
Yeah.
Right? Like, most bosses, if you're making them money, they're going to treat you exactly as well as they have to treat you.
Yep.
Which is, I think, what he did. But yeah, their job was to be ridiculed. It wasn't this, like, oh, I'm going to show these people.
This is me. Nope. No. Not like that at all.
Not like that at all. They weren't. And I don't think the oddities were ever under the impression that they had some sort of, like, autonomy.
Yeah.
I don't think that was ever.
Agreed.
So, there you go.
There you go.
I mean, he's not a good guy. He certainly is not what they portray him in the movie, as he's actually quite the opposite.
Yes. So, what'd you give this movie?
Oh, a 1 out of 10.
1 out of 10! I hate this movie. Hated it. Horrible. Horrible.
Yeah.
Do you have a...
A review.
A review?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Okay. For 8 out of 10. Forget the critics. Just enjoy the movie. As usual, the critics fail to grasp the obvious. Does it entertain? Yes, it does. Absolutely. Sure, it may not match the real story, and many things are not based on reality, but that's the point. It's a movie. It's a music. It's a fun musical. Very well done and enjoyable. If it was a made-up story about John P. Picklestack, then the critics would have nothing to complain about. I actually like this much better than La La Land. Guess it's more upbeat. Musicals are a rare breed. Enjoy them while you can. I like this idea that, like, musicals are going to go away, so you better have fun.
You better have fun while they're still here.
I also just fundamentally disagree with this.
Yeah.
Like, I think if this, you're right, I do agree that, like, well, there would be less to complain about if it was a made-up person.
Yes, but there still would be stuff to complain about.
Yeah, this movie would still be bad. I see just a lot of the people like this because it's, like, upbeat.
Yeah, and they're like, it's so inspiring. It's not!
Also, I just think, like, it's not ethical to just lie.
I know! About, they're just going to blatant lies.
Yeah, like, it's just not ethical to just be like, I think there is, like, a level of ethical storytelling that, like, yeah, you have to condense things in real life. You have to change things around sometimes to make them more interesting to fit a story. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't necessarily like movies where it feels like you're just reading a Wikipedia article. Yeah. Like, sometimes you have to change things in order to make them, or, like, things that can be true about a person may not be able to be easily represented by one event in real life.
Yeah.
So you have to make up an event that is easy
to
represent, like, a real idea about the person.
Definitely.
However, this movie takes, like, semi-real events, twists them and turns them to make an idea that is just not true.
That's not true at all. And it's just, like, feeding into these misconceptions that people have about these titans of industry, right?
Exactly. Like, this, yeah, it's like, the fact is, P.T. Barnum was a very normal capitalist man.
He was a con man.
He was a showman, right? Like, I don't even know... I feel weird calling him a con man in a way because, yeah, he kind of, like, it's hard to look back and know what people would have been thinking about this. Like, did people really think it was a mermaid? Yeah. I don't know. Like, now if you go to the circus and you see that stuff, you know it's fake, yeah. right? Like, when you see the fattest man alive or whatever, you know it's not real. Or like,
but at that point in time...
Did people know?
You had no idea.
Exactly.
You don't know what exists.
Exactly. And P.T. Barnum did have real things at his museum. Like, mm-hmm. like a hot air balloon ride, that's sweet.
That's pretty sweet. Like, garden on top of a building with a hot air balloon ride, that's great.
Yeah, and like, he had a lot of interesting machines that were really whatever, and obviously his Jenny Lind thing
yeah.
was very, like, that was actually real. Like, she was a really amazing singer, mm-hmm. and all of these things. But...
You're making him out to be this humanitarian.
Yeah, when, like, in reality, he bought a slave, worked her to death, and taught a four-year-old to smoke and drink.
So, I really know what you're doing here.
And it's like, look, at the time, doctors were giving babies heroin. We didn't know a lot about professional ethics. And we cannot judge him. We can't really judge him by the standards of today. But my point is, even for the standards of back then, he was just a normal dude.
Normal dude.
He wasn't Jenny Lind donating all of her money to charity to help poor Swedish people learn. He was making money off of it.
Yeah.
And that was his goal, and he did it. And, like, he did what he had to do it, and he jumped from con to con. Like, he went where the money was.
He went where the money was. Yes.
And I think that, like, to act like this was, like, always his dream,
yeah.
and that this was, like, a big...
Like, inclusivity is, like, his dream.
And that he, like, all of this was, like, part of what he wanted to do, and that he really cared about, you know, just making the audiences happy. It's yeah. like, I just think he's good at it, and he leaned into what his strengths were, and he loved money, and that's how he made it.
And that's how he made it, yeah.
And, like... I don't know if I necessarily, like, fault him for that. That's a very...
It would have been a really interesting story if they had actually done the story.
Yeah. It's a very... I think it's very normal. I think we have people like that today.
Yeah.
Like, I think that most people just go where money is and they do what they have to do to get their money. And, like, if that means that they can be nice, then awesome. And if it means that they can't be nice, then they really don't care.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he went out of his way to be awful to these people, but, like... Mm-hmm. He wanted them to laugh at them. That's kind of the bit.
That's why he made the money.
Exactly. Because people wanted to stare and laugh and make fun. And that is the bit. And to act like that's not what it was is just completely lying.
Lying. You're just blatantly lying.
It's not very ethical.
To children.
Not very ethical storytelling.
It is not very ethical storytelling. I would agree. Ugh. Anyway, I'm glad that's over.
Yeah, me too. This was fun.
Yeah, I really wanted to talk about a movie we didn't like. Like, yeah. really didn't like.
Yeah,
I mean, I know we watched Hannah Montana movie.
And that was bad.
That was bad, but, like, this is, like, bad.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. It has a lot of bad movie qualities, and it has a lot of unethical storytelling
yes.
qualities. And I think the real story of P.T. Barnum is interesting and could be done really well and really nicely dramatically.
You could have even kept the name.
Yeah.
It would have been fine.
Well, originally it was supposed to be. I think it might just be, like, it wasn't going to be very family friendly.
Yeah. This is wild.
I would love to read a actual book on P.T. Barnum.
Oh, me too.
Because
yeah.
that just reading his Wikipedia article and a few articles was
so interesting. Yeah. Wildlife. Anyway, thanks guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys.
Bye.